conversation, real information. Live from Lake Wissota, this is Up North News with Pat Brightlow.
Well, here we are. Good morning. It is Thursday, the 4th of August. Welcome to Wisconsin's new coffee break. I'm Pat Kreitlow. A little later this morning, we will have candidate for Congress Mark Newman as we continue our series of candidate interviews with people running in the 3rd Congressional District. And certainly we're going to get into a whole bunch of other campaigns once we get past Tuesday's primary. But first, we're going to spend some time getting right into a visit with somebody who's not on the ballot this year, but no less busy, Senator Tammy Baldwin. Senator, nice to have you here. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
This is normally the it's about to be that quiet time of year. We talk about Congress going on recess, and many years that comes and goes without much notice. But there's been something rather unique about the past couple of years with, you know, the Biden administration trying to get a domestic agenda passed, certainly other matters that need to be taken care of right away, like, say, gun safety. There's matters that come up that shouldn't be a hiccup, like the burn pits bill for veterans. This feels like an atypical summer for Congress, for whatever reason. Does it feel that way to you?
Well, it feels like a lot of accomplishment. We passed the CHIPS and Science bill last week. While there was a big hiccup on the PACT Act, which is the toxic exposure bill, last week, Republicans blocked it. But we had a big turnaround earlier this week. And this is one of the most major pieces of legislation to recognize and do right by our veterans than we've had in like 30 years.
Yeah.
And then we yesterday voted to add Finland and Sweden to NATO. Something that will definitely strengthen the alliance and send a very clear message to Russia about its illegal invasion of Ukraine. And now we are beginning our work on a major Inflation Reduction Act, as it's named, which will do just that, as well as lower prices for prescription drugs, for healthcare, and probably will be the boldest action we'll take on climate change in our nation's history, reducing carbon emissions by 40% in the next 8 years.
Yeah, so
a lot of accomplishment.
There is, and then there were all the things that happened prior to that, the American Rescue Plan and things like that. So we're going to get into some more of the details on the Inflation Reduction Act and the CHIPS Act, and something that probably doesn't get as much time devoted to it as it should. And those are the rural matters that you work on, chairing a subcommittee for that. So before we come back into the things that the Senate is working on right now, I want to take these couple of minutes before we go to break and take care of some of the political matters that are going on out there. The Senate race for Democrats looking to take on Ron Johnson changed quickly last week, and Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes essentially cleared the field. My own, theory on that is Mandela had always been a strong candidate. Internal polling showed that, he was coasting his way in, and that the rest of the field said, look, let's get united behind this now. I could obviously be completely wrong, but what's your impression on how that particular Senate campaign is getting set up for probably Mandela Barnes and Ron Johnson?
I think your views are accurate, the candidates who are polling in second, third, and fourth place couldn't see a path to ultimately winning that primary, and very honorably suspended their campaigns and endorsed Mandela Barnes in a great show of Democratic unity, knowing that the real matter before us is defeating Ron Johnson, who has not been doing the work, you know, focusing on his constituents and focusing on Wisconsin, but rather, you know, his own agenda that has very little to do with jobs and, you know, the well-being of people in the state.
Well, you know, and you put it rather diplomatically, it's going to be a bruising campaign, no doubt. And same with the governor's race. And we'll probably talk about that on the other side of this upcoming break here. But in the couple seconds we have here, traditionally in midterms, there are headwinds with incumbents, especially Democratic incumbents. But I get the impression that between many different circumstances, Ron Johnson's record, the repeal of Roe v. Wade, this is not the traditional headwinds faced by Democrats year.
Between the accomplishments we were just talking about, the legislation we're working on right now, and the devastating blow with the Supreme Court overturning Roe versus Wade, and in Wisconsin, kicking women back to a law enacted in the 1840s, this is definitely going to be an atypical midterm election. And, you know, even with the economic challenges, it's Democrats who are fighting to lower inflation and lower prices, not Republicans. So
yeah.
I'm very hopeful.
Welcome back. This is Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Senator Tammy Baldwin joins us for the next 15 minutes or so. We have a lot of ground to cover in that time, so let's just jump right back into it, Senator. I saw you at the state Democratic convention in La Crosse not long ago, and you were talking about the stakes of several different political races. Certainly high up on that list as well is Governor Tony Evers, no matter who wins the Republican primary next week. How do you frame that race to folks?
Well, first of all, if we did not have Governor Evers in office and his ability to veto harmful legislation passed by our overwhelmingly Republican gerrymandered Assembly and Senate, we would have a much more difficult situation in the state of Wisconsin. I think about all that the legislature has tried to do with regard to, you know, putting obstacles in the way of people trying to access the ballot box, and the additional burdens they would have, you know, placed on women seeking reproductive health care. Now, the situation has changed drastically now that the U.S. Supreme Court has overturned Roe versus Wade. But I just think about how Tony Evers has been able to stop very harmful legislation from moving forward with his veto pen. Beyond that, he has been a very capable steward during a very difficult time as our state faced the pandemic, just like we saw globally, but he had a very steady leadership style in during that, and I think really was quite an effective leader during a very difficult time. And he is polling well, especially given you know, difficult times across the board. He's viewed very favorably in contrast to other political figures in the state. So I'm very grateful for the steady leadership of Governor Evers.
Speaking of women's reproductive rights, I think most people were surprised by not mm-hmm. just the outcome, but the margin by voters in Kansas, by making sure that abortion rights remain protected. What lessons can be learned from that in Wisconsin and elsewhere?
Well, I think we would have seen very similar results if there were such a referendum in Wisconsin. there is a significant majority of Wisconsin citizens and voters who favor abortion care being legal, safe. It is just very painful, I think, for Wisconsinites who have, you know, an appreciation of a state with a progressive history, seeing women lose freedom, freedom to control their bodies, their healthcare, their freedom to decide when and whether to have a family. And in Wisconsin, particularly, to be thrown back into the mid-1800s, which is a reflection of when Wisconsin passed its first criminal abortion law 1 year after statehood in 1849, 70 years before women had the right to vote.
Yeah, it is a unique circumstance that, and one that one would hope would be temporary. As we go back to reviewing some of the legislation that's being worked on in Washington, D.C. With Senator Tammy Baldwin, one that doesn't get the attention, doesn't get necessary attention perhaps, but is rooted in a Wisconsin experience, is something called the Brokaw Act, and gets at the heart of what has certainly be something stuck under my craw for over a decade, and that is, you know, the way that Wall Street has gone from the way capitalism should work in terms of investing in businesses to essentially being a casino, and you, somebody else pays for your chips. What is it that's happening now with the Brokaw Act, named for that mill in northern Wisconsin that was essentially shut down by a hedge fund? What kind of action is happening there?
Well, we put forward legislation to try to give companies early warning when there was an activist hedge fund on the scene trying to manipulate the governance of domestic corporations. And by the way, I've had the same concern as have many others about private equity also. We saw the demise of Shopko when a sort of predatory private equity firm took over and liquidated all the property and sent the business into bankruptcy ultimately. But in the Brokaw Act, what we wanted is an early warning system, which involved the SEC, the Securities Exchange Commission, requiring hedge funds to disclose their ownership share when they reached a critical ownership level of 5%, and to disclose if there were what we call wolf packs, i.e., several different hedge funds owning more minor positions but acting in concert with each other to take over and throw their weight around with regard to a corporation. In the case of the Brokaw Act, we finally got the SEC, the Securities Exchange Commission, to act on its own, require companies to, hedge funds to make these disclosures. And that is gratifying. It makes me angry that it took this long, but indeed they finally acted on their own, and it is now required of these hedge funds.
Senator Tammy Baldwin is our guest, and she chairs the Senate Appropriations Subcommittee for Agriculture, Rural Development, and Other Matters. It takes care of things that help fund matters like the Dairy Business Innovation Initiatives that supports dairy entrepreneurs. It supports the USDA's Institute for Rural Partnership to address some unique challenges. But where I think most people would perk their ears up is that this is kind of the area that really helps with rural broadband, something that through Reconnect and other programs needs to happen. What kind of progress is being made on that this year?
It's very exciting because in addition to the annual budget and appropriations measures, we infused the USDA with ReConnect dollars in the bipartisan infrastructure law. We call it, by the way, the bipartisan infrastructure law, but there were no Republicans in Wisconsin who voted for that act. Fortunately, there were some Republicans who stepped up elsewhere, but it does allow the USDA to play a very vibrant role in making sure that we deploy high-speed internet access throughout the state, including in remote areas. And one thing that's interesting about the program is it's technology neutral. So that's really helpful in Wisconsin, where the terrain and the circumstances differ from, you know, rural community to rural community. You know, there's sometimes you're running the last mile via, a pipeline, basically. And sometimes you're using Wi-Fi and cell towers, and other times even satellite technology. But we need to use whatever works, because truly in this 21st century time period, if you're not connected to high-speed internet, you're kind of left behind in the world of education, the economics. I mean, this is how many people receive healthcare these days. And the pandemic taught us, we need it. We need it everywhere.
Yeah, and it takes all levels. We're working on a story at Up North News explaining to folks how Little Boulder Junction came together and said, we're not going to take this anymore. And yes. it took a variety of partnerships. No little place can get it done alone, and no single level of government. Let's wrap things up with the Inflation Reduction Act. That is the thing that is being worked on most right now. You've talked about it very briefly in that it takes care of a lot of different matters. Take something that's in there that you're especially proud of or will especially have impact on Wisconsin should we overcome the last of the Manchin cinema soap opera and finally get this passed. What to you will bring impact to Wisconsin in this?
Well, I'll pick one issue that I've worked on for years, and that is allowing Medicare to negotiate with big pharmaceutical companies to lower the price of prescription drugs. We know that the United States pays a lot more than any other industrialized country for our prescription drugs. And part of that is because we just don't negotiate. In fact, there's a bar on negotiation. When Medicare, on behalf of its over 40 million beneficiaries, gets in there and starts negotiating, it will not only bring prices down for people who are on Medicare, but it will have a ripple effect for all people who need prescription medication to cure or treat conditions that they're living with. One of the examples used frequently is the cost of insulin. Insulin has been on the market for over 100 years. It hasn't changed. There's several companies that make insulin, but the price goes up and up and up. And people who have type 1 or type 2 diabetes that require insulin often can't afford it anymore. And it's a life-saving medication.
And it's something, it's a matter that is so ridiculously overdue, along with the prescription drug negotiations, which never probably should have been in that bill in the first place. We've recognized for years that was a flaw in the bill. And we're going to talk later, not you and I, but I'm going to talk later about the Postal Service Reform Act. finally fixing something from 2006. Now, these are all things that have needed to be done, but they're finally getting done under this administration and with you and others helping to run the Senate. And so we really appreciate that you took some time to explain some of that to us. Senator Tammy Baldwin, hope once you get this last spurt of business done, it's a relaxing recess, and then come back and ready to do some more work for us.
Yes, and I'll be visiting up north.
All right. Can't wait for that. Senator, thank you so much. Have a great day.
You too.
All right. Senator Tammy Baldwin joining us here in the first hour. In the second hour, congressional candidate Mark Newman. And in the third hour, Kiev Akil is our national correspondent for Courier Newsroom. And we'll talk more about some of the issues happening in Washington, D.C. and the primary elections that took place in other states.
Real information, good conversation. Unabashedly Wisconsin, you're listening to Up North News.
Just going to be a gorgeous day, pretty much everywhere across Wisconsin. Sunny, quiet, not as humid today and tomorrow, probably around the mid-80s. You know, it depends on where you are in the state. The heat starts to return on Saturday, maybe the rain, depending on where you are as well. So, I mean, basically, if you're today and tomorrow, if you want to join me out on the roads at some point, keep that top off the Jeep. This is why you bought the Wrangler in the first place. You give that little wave to one another. I mean, come on, Luke, you know how cool we look when we're driving those open top Jeeps around. You know, I don't have Biden's aviators, but I'll throw on these sunglasses here. And the whole reason I want you to know how cool we look in them is that you don't know that behind the scenes, when we're trying to put that soft top up or take that soft top down, it looks worse than a group of squirrels trying to assemble furniture from IKEA. It is not a graceful process. My wife has a convertible. She pushes a button. Roof goes up, roof goes down.
Nice and quick.
Ours is a bit more of a functional training, as my daughter, the personal trainer, would say. So we're going to enjoy looking cool and keep that top down as long as we can.
Yeah, you just don't want to have to put it on, take it off, put it on, take it off over and over again. That does not sound like fun at all.
No, I've only been caught in the rain with it open one time. It was a big one time. It was one of those, you know, where you look on the radar and the cluster forms right over you. And that's what happened that particular day and how I ended up with about 2-3 inches of water in the Jeep. But
but
it tell you, that's what it's built for. You just lift up the carpet. It's got those plugs. It drains right out. You leave it in the sun for a while.
Oh, nice.
I love that thing. There I really go. Do. It's my third Wrangler. It's also my last because between my knee and other things, I'm not a young man anymore. I've already decided my next vehicle after this Jeep is going to be in that whole Buick Cadillac frame. I'm ready. I'm ready for the rich Corinthian leather to park my butt. I need a quiet ride. I'm going to ride gracefully into old age.
Is it going to be like one of those Matthew McConaughey, you're riding in a Lincoln commercials kind of vibe?
Yeah. Okay. Without being so damn goofy.
Okay.
You know, just, I hope the car doesn't make you like that because that was some weird behavior going on in those spots. Brewers losing Pittsburgh 8-7 on a walk-off homer. It was one of those games that just kind of breaks your heart. They went up 4-0 in the second. Then it was, you know, then they gave up it all. They gave it all up 4-4 in the sixth, but then they score 3 to go up 7-4, you know, but then they let Pittsburgh come back in the eighth to tie it. Freddie Peralta made his first start since May 22nd. I guess I'd give it a solid B. Other people would grade it higher, you know, 3 2/3 innings, 4 hits, 2 runs, 2 walks, 3 strikeouts. He's up to 67 pitches. We have had a pitch count problem, you know, it seems to me this year when every time I'm looking, you know, at the TV, it's like, holy cow, we're approaching 100 pitches in the fifth inning or something like that for our starters. And we've got to do better if we're going to, you know, take what we've got and go further with it, especially since somebody like Devin Williams stepping into the closer role gives up his first run in 30 appearances. And, you know, we need it to be 31. If we're gonna go anyplace with that. We had the distinct pleasure of talking to Senator Tammy Baldwin in our first half hour, reviewing things before the August recess comes, and then very little gets done after that because you've got the campaign till Election Day. But I did want to take a moment. We talked about rural broadband, and let's just take the rural out of it. Let's just talk broadband in Wisconsin. And I'll be curious as to, you know, what Luke's got and what you all have. I think I'm going to put that up on Up North News as kind of our question of the day is, you know, what kind of internet speed are you dealing with? I put it up as a personal question on Facebook to my Facebook friends, and some like us who have it through the cable company, we are blazing fast at 300 megabits per second. There's no way I could do a radio show through a Zoom video feed from my home if it weren't for, you know, 300 megabit internet service. And then the first comment was from somebody, I believe in Pepin County. Eight. Their internet is 8 megabits per second. Okay, that's Fred Flintstone could come and act out the cartoon for you speed rather than wait for any video to come down. So, I mean, there's a lot of room left for improvement. A lot has happened, and we should get somebody on from like the state level. And I mentioned we're going to do a story pretty soon on Boulder Junction, you know, what they do at the local level. But you know, there's a lot to be done, and there's going to take a lot of what we learned in the Boulder Junction story that we're working on is you obviously have to have local buy-in. You can't just have, you know, the mayor or the city council say, yep, we're going to do this, because it may involve, you know, additions to the levy, but then it won't be as additional on the tax burden if you get state help or if you get federal help. I just liken it to, you know, is the railroad going to come through, or is the interstate highway going to come through? And it may or it may not, but what are you at the local level willing to do to help make that happen? Don't expect it to come along for free. Now, Luke, I don't remember what part of town you're in down there, but what is your situation? Or do you have to come to work or sit in the parking lot of a McDonald's in order to get some good internet speed?
No, I'm in Sun Prairie. In Sun Prairie, I believe I also have three. I think there was a deal going on. So for this first year, we recently moved into the new house, and I believe TDS is who our provider is, TDS. And they offered 600 megabytes per second for the same price as the 300 megabyte per second package. And I went with that one because previously in the apartment, I had 300, but you never actually got 300 megabytes per second. Like I think consumer protection is a huge aspect where corporations are taking advantage. And I think that the max speed that we're sold from some of these internet providers is kind of pretty wonky, because you never actually get that speed. They can tell you that it might get up to that.
The conditions have to be just right. The wind has to be blowing just so out of the west.
Nobody else can be using it in a 50 square mile radius or something. I don't understand, because I never actually see when, because you can go to websites now and test what your incoming internet speed is, and I never see it at the height that you get promised on these packages. So I can't imagine what 8 megabytes per second would be, because that's like you said, Fred Flintstone level.
I worked for a time. Our Up North News Madison newsroom was in one of these shared office buildings, you know, that try to promise all the bells and whistles. And I had never seen anything like it before. And I don't remember. I want to say it was 500 megabits per second. I mean, I had just never seen, you know, speed like that before. And, you know, it seems like the kind of thing that at some point is going to be ubiquitous. People will say, well, what do you mean you didn't always have color TV? Well, let me tell you, there was black and white once upon a time. And we're going to look back at this era the same way. Let me put the phone number out in case people want to tell us about their experiences. 715-388-7155. That's 715-388-7155. Or send us a note by email, radio@upnorthnewswi.com. That's radio@upnorthnewswi.com. I heard from somebody else, a friend out in on Tainter Lake in Dunn County near Menominee, and he has that rare that unicorn experience of having a choice of two different broadband internet providers. I mean, we still don't have that for cable TV in a lot of places where people felt like, you know, there's a monopoly. And then finally, you know, some dish networks came along and helped provide some competition. But you know, again, just to get one high speed provider would be, you know, a big deal. And I mean, Luke, if the senator talked about how we have to improve it because that's how people sometimes get their health care now, is through telemedicine. And if we've learned nothing from the pandemic, it's how everything has moved to Zoom. And these radio shows have moved to Zoom. I mean, I could be in a pair of gym shorts right now. You'd never know from depending on which meeting I'm in. And I will never ask what you're wearing, Luke, but you know, the whole internet setup has changed it all.
I appreciate that. Yeah, the internet setup has changed a lot. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe like the definition of high-speed internet is only like 25.
100 megabits. 100? Yeah.
Okay. So to get to 100 everywhere and offer that high-speed option, I think is crucial. And it's good to see that we're making progress on it, but it is a problem that there has been efforts to address it in the past, but throwing money at it necessarily isn't the only thing that works. We have to find ways to increase competition, like you said, for more providers to come in and offer this so that we can have that free market competition that will drive down costs and hopefully expand access.
Right. And now that's where we get into discussion of what you might call the public option. And if anybody remembers the debate over the Affordable Care Act, there was a lot of talk about putting in a public option. So that, again, it would kind of act as a check, you know, so that there couldn't be, you know, monopoly power in certain markets and such. And we don't have that. We don't have that because of one guy, Joe Lieberman, who single-handedly said he would not vote for the Affordable Care Act unless we took the public option out of the bill. So thank him. Rest in peace, I guess. Thank him for the lack of a public option. Similarly, when it comes to higher quality cell and broadband service, there have been many places around the country, Wisconsin included, that wanted to form, you know, municipal networks to work to invest into the infrastructure and potentially essentially make it like a public utility. But once again, that's the kind of thing that Republicans put the kibosh on and said, nope, we're not going to allow that because, you know, don't worry, the free market will take care of it. Well, I'll tell you what, as a state legislator, we worked on a bill that kind of gave an overhaul of cable and telecom regulations. And it was something that was definitely not so much a partisan issue as it was, you know, depending on your geography. In other words, those of us who were outstate Democrats were pretty skeptical that anything was going to come of the bill unless you put some more teeth in it. But our Democratic colleagues from, you know, the Madison, Milwaukee areas said, well, hey, wait, no, we can, you know, we're going to get all this extra competition here. And we said, yeah, you are. I mean, the big companies, they're going to want to come to Madison and Milwaukee and, you know, maybe Green Bay and certainly try to, you know, promise more service and get more customers. And I did ask a lobbyist for, you know, one of the behemoth telecom companies. I said, what's your company's plan to get up to Chippewa County? And, you know, if you ever want to see some good tap dancing, you know, ask somebody from corporate America a direct question about what are you going to do for me? And, you know, this person knew me well enough that they could answer fairly candidly, but no, there's really no plan, you know, to expand. But we still would like your vote on the bill. Well, that didn't happen, you know, because, again, if a legislature is going to do anything, it's going to try to improve lives and not, you know, deregulate things at the expense of service in the district where you are. Because again, without this, and this was all pre-pandemic, we need this. This is our modern way of delivering information, of delivering radio shows, of delivering lessons to our kids. Yes, you want the kids in school as much as possible, but you know, at times of like, I don't know, a public health emergency, you know, you have to go with the next thing. And such is the case for telemedicine. And this is where I have to tell a tale about telemedicine that, you know, you have to be careful of what you wish for, because obviously being married to a physician, and so therefore I know several physicians, and they have had to, you know, along with being the heroes that they are, they have had to, you know, make some accommodations for their types of practice, do a bit more telemedicine work. And in many ways that can be done just fine. It can't be done with the obstetricians and gynecologists. You know, at one point they got a note, you know, saying, you know, your department isn't doing as much telemedicine as, you know, internal medicine and some of the others. And one of the docs said to them, I want you to think about that for a moment. Try doing gynecology as telemedicine. Are you going to tell somebody, why don't you scoot a little closer to the camera? That's not telemedicine. That's pornography. So needless to say, you know, they backed off of that. Telemedicine is essential, but, you know, you're never going to get the robot to deliver the baby for you. That's for sure. We will take a break, come back with more of Up North News. Congressional candidate Mark Newman coming up in our next hour. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Up North News on a Thursday morning. I'm Pat Kreitlow, and Mark Newman will be joining us in our next hour to wrap up our series of third congressional district candidates. There are many special days on the calendar, days that tell you that you should be doing something. Usually it's some kind of an obligation. Sometimes it's a treat. Today would be one of those treat days. This is National Chocolate Chip Cookie Day. And you remember, Luke, we used data from Yelp. It wasn't Yelp yesterday, it was Airbnb, to find the most Midwestern thing, only to find out that it's walleye. Walleye is like the most Midwestern thing out there. Well, in this case, it was Yelp for an article that our reporter Christina Laurie did for Up North News. You can find it on the website now, upnorthnewswi.com, about using Yelp data to find out in each region of Wisconsin what is the top rated chocolate chip cookie and what is the most reviewed on Yelp chocolate chip cookie. And, you know, somehow she went through all of that and split the state into five different regions. And I don't know that I can say off the top of my head that there's a place I go to just for their chocolate chip cookie. I mean, if they've got it, it's fine, but I don't know, Luke, if I were down by you, I would be hitting up, you know, like Insomnia. Is Insomnia Cookie still on State Street?
It is.
I would be. And they deliver. I would probably be doing that.
They do deliver. I feel like it's kind of, Insomnia is a chain. And so them. But I feel like it's not, I don't like their cookies as much. They're great when you're like late at night and you're like, oh, I could really go for a cookie. And they've got some pretty cool combinations. But there's a place down on Willie Street, Sourdough Bread Company, and I can't go in there without the expectation that I'm going to be walking away with at least a couple sweets. So I'll get like a loaf of bread, but then also they've got great cookies, they've got great scones, croissants, everything. And so that's probably my place to go to here locally, but I don't know how it rated on Yelp.
If I really want a cookie, I tend to go to a furniture store. I think it's either Slumberland or Ashley or somebody, you know, has a plate of cookies out there. It's probably a tube of Pillsbury dough. But, you know, again, a fresh cookie, there's no such thing as a bad fresh chocolate chip cookie. So I'm going to go through and name some of these. I don't have a lot of details, but if this is in your part of the state, you might recognize it and it might make you hungry and you might want to go check it out. For the northern part of the state, it is the I don't know, up in Cable. Is it the, I don't know if it's Velo or Velo, so forgive me for that. They get a lot of praise for their made from scratch and organic options. Up in Washburn, it's Coco Artisan Bakery and Goods. In the western part of the state, it's the Bluebird Bakery and Cafe in La Crosse. The most reviewed cookie there is from the French Press in Eau Claire, which isn't too far away from me, but I just haven't made the trip down. So maybe that's what I'm doing with the Jeep later today. Let's see. Northeast Wisconsin, the top rated cookie is Uncle Mike's Bake Shop in Green Bay. Sorry, I almost said Uncle Mike's Bait Shop. Come see the walleye cookies that they make there every day. But meanwhile, Uncle Mike's Bake Shop in Green Bay, you know, they have, of course, they have Kringles. It's Northeast Wisconsin. But they also have, you know, chocolate chip cookies and all kinds of good things. The most reviewed cookie shop in Northeast Wisconsin, according to Yelp, is Scaturo's or Scaturo's Baking Company and Cafe in Sturgeon Bay. Now let's go down to Southern Wisconsin, where Yummy Treats of Madison. Apparently they have a booth at the Dane County Farmers Market, and they have the ooey gooey chocolate chip cookie. Each 6 ounce cookie is packed with a quarter cup of melted chocolate chips.
They're pretty good.
I don't know if that's a cookie anymore, if you're putting that much chocolate into it. That's a chocolate bar with some dough, isn't it?
It's a lot of chocolate. It is a lot of chocolate. I have had that one before. They're best when they're warm. But because of all that chocolate, it does essentially become a chocolate bar if you don't eat it right when it's like right fresh and hot.
That's actually the note that Christina passed along. I don't know if it's from her or from Yelp, but it says right there, they're best enjoyed warmed in a 350 degree oven for 7 minutes. So yeah, you were right. But the most reviewed cookie in Southern Wisconsin, also in Madison, is Gray's, which is, I've never eaten there. I've walked past it a million times, but I would, you know, it kind of has that hoity-toity, you know, restaurant look to it on the Capitol Square. It's known for its cheese curds. You know, it's Chef Tori Miller beat Bobby Flay on Food Network. And so people think of it as a restaurant, but apparently the chocolate chip cookies there are baked to order and get the you know, a tremendous amount of reviews. So keep that in mind if you're going out to dinner next time you happen to be in Madison. In Southeast Wisconsin, it's the C. Adams Bakery of Milwaukee. The most reviewed is Rocket Baby Bakery in Tosa, where they say, you know, that it's gooey inside, but there's, you know, crunchy edges. And, you know, so if you don't mind a run to Tosa, and I would, I certainly miss that. We spent 4 years there when my wife was attending the medical college. And so, again, I'm very thankful that I wasn't exposed to Rocket Baby Bakery cookies back then. You know, we were raising babies. We were putting up with med school hours. I didn't need that, you know, to add as well. Meanwhile, sitting off to in my phone, actually parked right now, is a recipe for an iron skillet chocolate chip cookie. I've never made one of those. Cast iron skillets are like one of my new loves. I make deep dish pizza in there. I make shepherd's pie. I make the best steaks that we've ever had, you know, ever since I started using a cast iron skillet. But I haven't made any kind of like a sweet treat. So when I realized that a cast iron skillet cookie is a thing, hey, count me in to try that. So one of these days I'm going to try it, and I'll share the results. If it's good, Luke, I will make you jealous and, you know, show it off right here as I devour some of it as a breakfast treat. And if it doesn't, you know, work, I'll use it as a frisbee or a doorstop or something like that, because I'm a little afraid.
I'll have to let you know, cast iron skillet, excellent for desserts over the campfire. My dad's got a cobbler recipe that he does when we go camping. It's tremendous, not just for the steaks, but for the sweets as well after dinner.
Nice. Okay. The aforementioned Up North News reporter, Christina Laurie, who put that story together and many more, actually joins us in this hour, the 8 o'clock hour, tomorrow morning. She is, she'll talk a bit about her experience as a Madison TV reporter at Channel 3 and the positive stories that she really enjoys doing for herself and for Up North News. She's even helped us create a new franchise for Up North News called Uplifting, where we try to put a good story up in the newsletter every day, which is otherwise polluted with all manner of people behaving badly that we think you have to know about. In the 9 o'clock hour, we will be joined by Cam Stevenson. He is my colleague over at the Arizona Copper Courier, again, part of Courier Newsroom, just as Up North News is. Arizona also had a crazy, wacky set of election results from their primary this week, and Cam will join us to talk about that and see what we can glean for Wisconsin politics. And then in our 10 o'clock, we will have freelance travel writer Susan Lampert-Smith, who has written numerous articles for Up North News about the places you can go for day trips, and give you some more suggestions. But Mark Newman in our next hour. This is Up North News. We'll be back.